Welcome back to Following Noah on a Stormlight podcast. This week is episode 193, and we are in the Alloy of Law, chapters 10 through 15. I have a couple announcements on the format of this episode, but first, Paul, how are you?
I'm doing great. Yeah, I'm excited to, once again, getting further into the book, learning more about our characters. Yeah, excited as always.
Elliot?
I'm doing quite well. More Sanderson, as always, so doing good. This book is flying past. I feel like we just started it, and now we're already heading towards the finish line. The book is shorter, but we've also been moving quick, so it's been a bit of a blur, like a train moving quickly by.
Nah, I see what you did there. Okay, so for our audio only, hopefully nothing has changed for this episode. For our visuals on YouTube, we are sacking our cameras for this week and next because of internet issues. So we're going to try to just do audio and see how that goes. And then secondly, for more episode specific details, we have finished the book. However, we're not going to explicitly talk about the Sanderlanch, if you will, or the ending of this book, chapter 16 through the epilogue. That will be next week. We are only going to be talking about chapters 10 through 15, which is kind of a character-focused, like, middle of the book. But we're not going to pretend like we don't know the ending. So if you're reading along with us for the first time or whatever, go finish the book and then come listen to this episode and next week. So with that said, let's roll intro and then we'll get a chapter summary from Elliot. Okay, Elliot, what happened in chapters 10 through 15 of the Alloy of Law?
All right. In chapter 10, our heroes pass by a museum about Vin and Elend. I think it's their actual gravesite where this museum has been built, which I thought was pretty cool since we just came out of Mistborn Era 1 to see that reference to the distant past for these characters now, which was pretty cool. Later in that chapter, they do find the hideout of the Vanishers. They're trying to track them down, and they do find the hideout. It's abandoned at this point. All the equipment and people have moved on, but they do find some clues. We learn a little bit about Wayne. Wayne has a conversation, I think, with Marcy at this point, and kind of reveals some of his backstory, which was very interesting. And then chapter 11 switches over to Miles' point of view, which was enlightening. We get to see a little bit about his motives, what he's trying to do, and why he's doing it, as well as maybe a little bit of information about his backstory. I'm interested to talk about that with you guys. We meet potentially the big bad guy. Mr. Suit is what Miles refers to him as. We learn that Marcy is an Allomancer, bit of a reveal. She's a pulser and has the opposite power of Wayne. She creates the little speed bubbles, but instead of time going faster in the speed bubble or slower, I'm still confused whether it's faster or slower. Basically, Marcy slows herself down while the rest of the world around her goes faster, which she bemoans how useless that is, but find out later, maybe not. Later on, oh yes, so and then chapter 12 and carrying into 13, Miles attacks Wax on the train, tries to take him down. I think all the heroes are on the train, but they have a little bit of a showdown on the moving train, which is pretty cool. Lots of cool Allomancy and Ferrochemy on show there. Chapter 14, they go and visit Renette, who's an old friend or foe. It's a little hard to tell. She's a gunsmith who's a little cranky, but they are able to hide out at her place for a little while and get some tools back again. And then chapter 15 is kind of they're formulating the plan and they're getting ready to go off and try and take down the Vanishers. And I think that covers it.
Sounds good. Yes, action sequences on top of locomotives. Paul, is this what you were expecting with Mistborn Era 2, or are you expecting more like plot and intrigue as opposed to just action sequence after action sequence?
So that's a good question. So I think originally I was expecting more intrigue originally. But as I think once I actually started this book, I understood that it would be more action, more fast paced. I think my preconceived notions before we started, though, were more slower political intrigue, not necessarily slow, but more intrigue, less super fast action action packed story. So where we are right now, it doesn't surprise me too much, but beforehand, that may not have been what I expected.
Do you think that will change or stay consistent as we move into further books? Because we only have one more episode of this book, and then we're straight into Shadows of Self.
So it's not entirely clear on me how these books are laid out, but my understanding is that it will change. I don't remember exactly, so correct me, but my understanding is the Alloy of Law was kind of written on its own, and then the other three books in this series are kind of the more long-term series. Yes. So I'm kind of taking that this one is going to be faster paced, more of a shorter, isolated story, maybe setting up our characters, and the others will aim for the more like overarching storyline, like major storyline, where this one may have been more linear, less big in scope. So that's my understanding.
What about you, Elliot? Are you enjoying the faster pace, light-hearted, fast read, or do you want more lore?
That's kind of a loaded question, because I always want more lore and I always want more backstory. My favorite book of all time is The Silmarillion by J.R.R. Tolkien, which is pretty much entirely a book of backstory and description and lore.
Yeah.
But that aside, I am really enjoying this, because so far it actually is exactly what I was expecting it to be. And I'm not sure exactly what all I based my preconceptions on, but faster pace, a little more lighthearted, lots of action, lots of allomancy and bullets flying everywhere is pretty much what I had in my mental picture, and it's been exactly what it's been so far in all the right ways. It's been a lot of fun.
With that said, it is more action focused. However, in this episode specifically, I feel like we do slow down a little bit from our bullets and explosions of last week and spend more time with our characters, because we get like an entire chapter set on Wayne backstory, and then we get another chapter that's split between Miles and Marisi on explaining their characters, and then we get more Wax exposition as well. So within what, the five chapters that we're covering this episode, six chapters, we have one and a half that's an action sequence. The rest is character focus, which I thought was interesting. Who do you guys want to start with?
We should hit Wayne first, because he's in that first chapter that we covered, chapter 10, and he's a little bit enigmatic in some ways. He's the comic relief character, but this is Brandon Sanderson. I know his characters are more complex than they seem on the surface, and I'm fully expecting this to be he's using humor and, call it what you will, I don't know. He's deflecting. I think he's deflecting from maybe a more complex past or a more darker side, perhaps something like that. And we delve into that a little bit in this chapter. Wayne is not what he seems.
Who does he have this conversation with? Marisi, I think?
I believe so.
Mm-hmm. I believe that's right. I have to say, I'm really glad that we're getting some backstory on Wayne. I love a good comedic relief, comedy relief character. But if he's going to be one of the primary characters, I don't want him to just sit at that level. I want to really have a bit more attachment for Wayne And so I'm really glad that we get some more glimpses into his past and just his story and things like that. So I fully expect that there may be stuff further fleshed out for these characters. You know, obviously this is the first of, I guess, four books in this era. So obviously I imagine we'll learn more. But just all in all, I'm glad we're getting some of this. I didn't know how much of this kind of content, this flashback content, we might get in our story. So, yeah.
Does Wayne's backstory change your guys' mind on Wayne at all? That he accidentally murdered an innocent guy trying to rob him and then Wax spared his life? Did that, like, I remember that being a decent reveal for me going through this the first time. Did it have a punch for you guys or not really?
I would say it definitely had a punch for me. I was a bit shocked, you know, since it is Wayne, I feel like it was kind of given with a lot of levity and it was very serious. It was very serious. Like, he has a lot of skeletons in his closet, you know, like I was surprised with how much, I guess, darkness and bad stuff he had done or how many people he had killed in the past. I was a little bit shocked. And I didn't really know how to take it because I don't have any reason aside from this to dislike Wayne. You know, he's a quirky guy, but, you know, doesn't seem to be bad at all. And then we get this and it's a bit weird. I'm still a bit on the fence, a bit conflicted. I don't know if I know what to think about this information that I was given, because it sounded like Wayne was, I mean, it wasn't malicious. It wasn't like super premeditated stuff, but it was weird. It was a bit weird. It was like he killed this guy. And then also, what is this, the chapter also where he talks about how he's like close-ish with their family? He like sends them gifts and stuff, yeah, like that, and they loathe him, but they accept the gifts and things of that nature. It was in very Wayne fashion, like how I guess you would expect Brandon Sanderson to write it, with a lot of levity and offhanded comments and weird stuff. But yeah, I don't know. Overall, of course, I still like Wayne. It's not like it left too sour of a taste in my mouth, where I'm like, oh, he's done bad stuff in the past, I don't like him anymore, but, you know, it's conflicting.
The conversation with Maracy specifically, I definitely think it changes Maracy's perception of Wayne, because up until this point, all the information that Maracy has, she's read at university, right? And now she's getting firsthand accounts of, you know, Wax and Wayne, the roughs, lawman type stuff. They're kind of like living legends in her mind. And to see Wayne be so flawed and human is a really interesting perspective for Maracy. And I think she grows a lot in that first chapter of chapter 10 of realizing that her heroes that she's grown up with reading about in university have flaws. What about the Maracy reveal? Did that one have a punch for you guys with the allomancy? Were you expecting her to be an allomancer?
I wouldn't say I was shocked. However, I'm very intrigued by her allomantic power. So right, this is the opposite of, I guess, the inverse or whatever of Wayne's, where I think Elliot mentioned, he touched on this briefly earlier, and I want to make sure I have this clear in my head. She, instead of a speed bubble, it's like a slow bubble. I don't know if it is a bubble. She can actually make a bubble bigger on average than the speed bubble.
Right.
But everything in it goes by super slow. So she slows herself down. My understanding is everything else goes normal speed, right? But she's just super slow. And that's how it works. I think Elliot mentioned that they speed up, and he probably mentioned that as of like, you know, they're going fast because she's going super slow. I was curious about that. And I really thought for a while of how could this be applied to be useful, because you know it's I feel like that's kind of a trope of someone's like, oh, I have this ability and it just doesn't do anything. You know, it just doesn't do anything. Like 11th metal kind of thing. You know, I don't know. There's always something like that. And then it comes up in some way that you don't expect and it tricks people. Something like that. There's some creative way to use it well. And I was really racking my brain with this, trying to figure out, and I couldn't come up with anything.
I fully expected Marcy to be an Allomancer. And I'm fully expecting Steris to also be an Allomancer.
Interesting.
I don't think that's revealed. I trust our villains to have done their homework and know who they're kidnapping. So as soon as they were kidnapped, I had them both pegged as, well, they got to be Allomancers. Her power specifically is an interesting one. And I'll save most of that discussion, I think, for next week, next episode. But I do think this story is turning into a heavy dose of real life for Marcy. She's very naive. She's read the books, but she hasn't really seen much in real life. So like every scene, Marcy is learning hard lessons. She learns about Wayne. She learns about Wax. She learns about shooting people instead of targets. She learns about using her Allomancy versus just knowing about it. Her development in this story feels like the most significant, actually, of all the characters.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not sure if Wax is super different from chapter one to the end of next episode. I guess there's the whole getting over Lessie thing. So at the beginning of this book, Wax accidentally shoots Lessie and has some PTSD in chapter one from it, where he can't shoot his gun against like these thugs that are in the alley robbing this guy. And I think he gets over it pretty quickly, right? Because he's shooting a bunch of people in the ballroom, the wedding scene. And then by this section of the book, it's fairly forgotten, I think. But reflect that with Wayne, who murdered a guy when Wayne was younger, like 16, I think he says, and still to this day can't hold a gun, right? Like he uses dueling canes, which conveniently actually pair pretty well with his magic system that he has. So he gets like real close, pops a speed bubble, and then 1v1s them with dueling canes, which is pretty cool. But anytime that a gun would be useful to him, he can't shoot it. His hands shake, he gets all nervous and can't handle himself. So I do think it's interesting that Sanderson chose to give them both like some traumatic stress with guns.
I'm not an expert on Westerns by any stretch of the imagination. I've probably watched a half a dozen, maybe, but I feel like isn't the battle scarred veteran a trope, if you will, in the Western? Sure. the warrior who's been through a lot of fights and has come out maybe a little bit broken or maybe a lot of bit broken. That's a thing, right?
I think you're definitely right. I'm also not extremely familiar with a bunch of Westerns, but I think you're definitely right. There's like the you know, maybe in my head this character trope is a bit older and it's more of the coming out of retirement almost kind of thing of he retired because the tragic incident in the past and things like that. Yeah, I think you're definitely right, though, Elliot. I think that's kind of a Western trope. Tragic, and also just like kind of the infamous villain or infamous criminal in your past that, that you know, everything went so wrong with and, you know, all that stuff. So it does feel like it. But I will say this is a fairly fresh thing to me because I feel like I'm very familiar with kind of the medieval fantasy tropes. And things like that, way more so than kind of a Western style or steampunk style. So It is still fairly fresh for me, but I think you're definitely right about that.
Yeah, definitely not saying this is boring by any means. I think this is very well executed, but I'm trying to kind of search out where some of the different styles of story he's going to play with in this series, trying to get into Western, maybe a little bit of steampunk, maybe starting to bridge a little bit into sci-fi a touch out of fantasy. And I'm trying to point to maybe some of those elements that are different from your medieval fantasy, like you were talking about there, Paul. So I was thinking maybe this is part of it.
Out of the two most popular private investigator pop culture stories, which one is it more like, Sherlock Holmes or Indiana Jones?
That's funny you should ask that, because the image I keep going back to in my mind, or the mental images I can't quite get out of my head, are the Robert Downey Jr. Sherlock Holmes movies.
Okay.
Which, if you've ever read Sherlock Holmes, are really very not like actual Sherlock Holmes. If you've read the books, there's other TV show or movie depictions of Sherlock Holmes that are way more true to the books. The Robert Downey Jr. ones are a ton of fun, and they're a little more goofy, a little more Indiana Jonesy. So I'm almost going to cheat and say a little bit of both. The best example I could point to would be the kind of cheesy movies that came out. Oh God, that was probably 10 years ago now, 12 years ago.
When did those come out?
It probably was about 10 years ago or so, or maybe more, maybe like 12 years ago. I will say I fully agree with that envisionment, Elliot. The Robert Downey Jr. Sherlock Holmes movies are basically just how I see this. It's like very explainy with the combat.
Yeah.
And a bit more mystical than like a old fashioned detective kind of thing. It's a bit more
2009.
Yeah, a bit more mod. Okay, 15 years ago. Wow.
Yeah.
Getting old.
So the old battered, wizened warrior, whatever, law keeper. And then there's Miles, right? Who has seemingly turned and waxed repeatedly over this episode and next. Mentions either to himself or to Miles, and admits it to Miles, that there's not much dividing Wax and Miles. It's just what Wax sees a lot of himself in what Miles does and how he holds himself. There's a difference, though, in that Miles is unsatisfied with the moral compass of Ellendale and the laws instated by Ellendale. So he's taking the law into his own hands and enforcing it back against Ellendale, trying to take revenge or vengeance against Ellendale for the people of the Roughs. So what did you guys think of Miles? Is he what you were expecting as a villain for the series?
I don't think he was really what I was expecting as a villain, just because we just came out of Mistborn Era 1 and Stormlight before that, where our villains have maybe bigger and more devious plans. Not to say that Miles isn't, but the fairly simple lawman gone wrong is not quite what I was thinking, but I think I was thinking too big. And Brandon's bringing it back a little bit smaller in scope to start this next series, which I should have expected by now, right? He's done that a lot. You start small and you grow larger and larger in scope as you go throughout the series. But I think I wasn't expecting this to be, you know, episode one, and we defeat the villain in episode one to discover, oh yeah, that wasn't actually the real villain. The real villain is going to be, you know, who the hero's fighting against in the next books.
Sure.
I have to say, I wasn't fully expecting this either, but I guess about at this point, I didn't really know who else it could be unless we have some kind of big reveal, or it was someone that we knew, but like to be good, but turned out to be evil kind of thing was the only other option left in my head. I actually said I should bring this up. I put in our patron live reaction Discord.
I was going to air this if you didn't, because it's funny. Yeah, yeah.
I'll pull it up. I'll read it. I'll read it. So whenever I read this chapter, I was thinking about this a good bit of Miles's power. It's very unique, very odd. So this whole compounding thing, I feel like we should talk about afterward. But okay. Why does it take me so long to find this? Oh, here it is. Okay, got it. Okay, so I'll just read. I'm just gonna read it word for word what I wrote. I said, "Okay, Alloy of Law, Chapter 11. We just met Miles. According to Wax, he is practically immortal, with how he can use gold indefinitely to restore his health. This gives me a random and large scale prediction. I think Miles will become a major villain, either just in this story or at a Cosmere scale. I make this prediction solely based on the fact he's hard to kill. I feel like Brandon's villains sometimes seem untouchable. So I feel like if Miles ascends to become a vessel or some sort highly invested, that he would become another Lord Ruler caliber hero, you know. That was the thought that popped into my head. And I wrote that a while ago, so I say a while ago, I guess 4 days ago. Wow. Anyways. Miles is interesting because this whole he can't really die thing, this whole what he's a gold allomancer and a gold ferrochemist, right? So he can use his allomancy to fuel his ferrochemy power to regenerate himself, which I guess this provided more insight for me into the Lord Ruler, which was in our previous, you know, trilogy of like how I guess overpowered this could be. I don't know. I'm interested to hear what y'all think more about the whole compounding thing as a whole. But as far as Miles, you know, that is kind of setting up to be the villain character. I hasn't been clear to me on how big of a scale it's going to get. If this is going to be kind of a petty villain for now or like super large scale. You know, was what I wasn't sure.
So there's a second half to this reaction, Paul, that you don't get to see, which I will reveal to you now. In the spoiler channel that you're not allowed in, I screenshotted this and put it for our all Cosmere spoiler channel to react to. I got 9 different people laughing at you with the context of next episode. And they all had quite the enjoyable reaction to that. So we continue to laugh at you guys behind your backs in the spoiler channels. Just want you to know that.
That's perfect. I love it.
Elliot, the term for double gold, a gold ferrochemist and a gold allomancer is called an auger.
Uh-huh.
Mr. Engineer Guy, what's an auger?
Well, I'm going to stop you there because you're going the wrong direction.
Oh, darn it.
It's not the auger you're thinking of.
I know. I was going to misdirect you, but you're too smart.
Nice try. I'm reading the book, not the audiobook, so I saw it spelled differently.
Darn it.
A-U-G-U-R, which I immediately assumed was a reference to augury, which is a more mystical,
like religious, fortune-telling?
Yeah, fortune teller, basically, an interpreter of omens, augury. But nice try.
But the reason why it's an auger is because they are a double gold allomancer, or necromancer, I guess. They're a double gold magic user. So AU is the abbreviation.
Clever.
So he's an auger. Get it?
I did not catch that.
And I didn't either. Is that been confirmed somewhere, or are you just as the fandom just been grasping at straws? Is that really part of the name?
That's why he chose that name, is because it's a double gold magic user, so it's an auger.
And interesting. Okay.
I assumed it was a reference to the allomancy side of that power, because the ferrochemy side of it is just healing. He's got ridiculously stupid levels of healing because he's pairing the Ferrokemi with the Allomancy. And we've seen, like in the Lord Ruler of Era 1, how that, you know, exponentially increases your powers. But the Allomantic side of that is this: see other versions of yourself. Wasn't that the power of gold?
Yes. Well, and he actually muses to himself on it when he does it, because he's like, am I seeing a past version of myself, or am I seeing a present day version of myself? Had I made a different decision in my past, and what's the difference there? So yeah,
right. But yeah, Augur, there we go.
There you go. We'll get into this a little bit more next episode, but he mentions Trell a couple times in this episode and a couple times next. What do you guys think of that?
I've got some theories for you, and it's going to get a little crazy, but we need the context of next episode and some of the events or words that Miles shares with us then. So consider this your teaser till next episode, where I do want to spout for a little bit about Trell, because we have heard about this before in Era 1. This is one of the religions that Sazed studied and shared with some of our characters in Era 1. So here it is back again, intriguingly, and I've got some stuff on it.
So this one specifically, I teased on you guys because I told you to look out for this name. I don't know if you guys caught that, but as we saw it in Era 1 and saw it again in the prologue of Era 2, I keep, you know, bringing up Trell and what's going on with Trell. So there's an interesting rabbit hole to go down there next episode. What else? What else about Miles?
I noticed in this section that, you know, we were talking about Miles's motive. What's he out to do? He feels the injustice of it all, is just trying to take down the system. Basically, he delivers the title line, the name of the book, The Alloy of Law. He basically draws a metaphor of the law being like a metal, but he says, no, I answer to a higher calling than the law. You know, Wax is trying to say, but you're a lawman, what are you doing? And Miles says, nope, I'm beyond the law. I follow an alloy of law. It's the next level of cool, basically, is I think what he's going for. So I was on the lookout for what alloy of law was supposed to mean, and there we go. Miles explained it to us.
There you go. There's always got to be one name drop in the book.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
At least one.
And then my last note on Miles for this episode anyway is that we see his metal mines. So we just talked about it, double gold burner. He's can burn gold for Allomancy, and he's got gold metal mines. But Wax notices specifically that his metal mines are spikes in him.
Yeah.
Well, I'm an Era 1 veteran now, so I know, know what that can mean when someone has spikes in them. So I immediately went to, okay, he's doing Ferrokemi, he's doing Allomancy. But anybody who's got a spike in them, I immediately start to wonder, is hemallergy at play as well? I don't know what exactly it means to have a gold spike in you, but could there be some other power going on here as well from a hemallergy standpoint? It doesn't seem like we ever get reference to that. And spoiler for that next episode, Miles doesn't make it to the end of the book, so maybe this won't come back, but could this be a first glimpse at hemallergy in this world? I'm curious.
Yeah, hemallergy is still conspicuously missing. Where is it?
I was going to say, this is the only place that we've really seen it so far at all. There's reference back to what the villain, or the early criminal in the prologue, saying he's seen iron eyes and things like that, but our understanding is that's not someone who's like a regular guy walking around. You know, there's not just people walking around with spikes in their eyes anymore, you know? So it's very oddly missing.
What about Renette? We haven't talked about Renette yet. I haven't even mentioned her yet. What'd you guys think of their gunsmith maybe romantic interest for Wayne, there's like bad exes or something going on there.
I mentioned before some of the Western stereotypes maybe coming into the story. I think I felt that the most in this scene here with Renette, like the cranky old lady with a shotgun. Ooh, yeah, we're in a Western when there's a cranky old lady with a shotgun who's going to shoot everybody who comes to her front door kind of thing. It was entertaining. There was some good stuff in this chapter. She's apparently a really good gunsmith and is super cranky and doesn't like Wayne and has invented haze killer weapons, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, I did think it was interesting that Sanderson copied that term one for one from Era 1 to Era 2.
I thought it was actually really cool. Renette even mentions that she's like, yeah, I was reading an old book and came across this ancient reference to haze killers. So I'm using that as a term going forward. It's like, ah, that's kind of a cool callback. Like, they don't even know necessarily what that is a reference to, but we do as a reader. So it's kind of a cool link between the two, I felt.
The only issue is your cranky old lady with the shotgun in your Western is in the middle of a city with skyscrapers.
Yes.
She's not out in the rest. She's just downtown.
There's another weird reference in this chapter 14. And I didn't take as detailed notes on this as I should. I think they're like reading words off the side of a gun or something like that. They're trying to like read an inscription. I forget exactly where it is. But they go, oh yeah, that's High Imperial.
Yes.
As if it were this like language. Like, oh, yes. This special like language.
Ancient Elvish.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like, yeah. Oh man, High Imperial. So now I'm keen. Like, ooh, lore. Okay, feed it to me. Let's go. And then they read it. And I should have noted down the page number and just read it out here. I don't have it. All it is Spook's nearly unintelligible street dialect.
Yeah. This is our first time, you know, going from an era one of a story to an era two, you know, part two of a story. And I have to say, this has been my favorite, like, I guess, crossover, whatever you want to call it, kind of moment, like, you know, Easter egg moment, because it's hilarious to me, because it's like not a major point, but it's a notable point throughout era one of this, like, weird, you know, weird way that Spook talks, wasn't the aware of having of whatever, you know, like all the weird ways that words are used. And then this, it's being like revered as like, ooh, high speech, you know, for, you know, it must have been, you know, very yeah. uppity, you know, very high class. So, like, we think of old English, you know, like, so there's like old English style. And then I don't know if y'all have ever read or seen or heard like the old English, like how like Beowulf was originally written or whatever, but it's basically yeah. unintelligible to me. Like you can read it and have no idea what's going on whatsoever. And this is what that's what I think of. I'm like, oh, this high hoity toity speech. I thought this was very funny. I'm really glad that Brandon Sanderson wrote this in there.
I actually found the page. I just got to read this because it's hilarious. There were several characters scratched into the metal. Wussing the wear of needing, she read, forming the unfamiliar words. The lofty tongue was used for old documents dating to the time of the origin and occasionally for government ceremony.
Government ceremony.
I think I laughed out loud thinking of Senate chambers with people in powdered wigs reading out nonsense street slang words, thinking it's high elvish.
Yeah
hilarious.
Home run on that one, Mr. Sanderson. Yes. I have an interesting quote to read from you guys. It doesn't have anything to do with High Imperial, or does it? No, I'm just kidding. Okay, from episode or from chapter 15. This doesn't have much to do with Mistborn, but I read this and I was just awestruck on, am I reading the right series or not? Let me read it for you. It said, The Ruffs are the place Honor goes to be murdered, Suit said. The Ruffs, Miles replied, are the place Honor goes to be strung up, flayed within an inch of its life, then cut down and left in a desert. If it survives something like that, it'll be stronger than hell. And I listened to that and I was like, wait, am I reading The Way of Kings? What? Why are they talking about honor being strung up? It's very interesting use of words there, Mr. Sanderson. Either of you guys catch that?
I absolutely caught this. But this is something where, you know, obviously the word choice is very intentional. Like us who have read Stormlight can instantly, you know, key into this, and it makes perfect sense. However, I couldn't think of anything that really, I guess, really makes a difference. You know, there wasn't anything in that really makes me think, you know, oh, I need to look back at the, you know, those moments or it changes how I think about anything in Stormlight. So I don't know. I obviously caught it, but I kind of just let it go. I didn't really, you know, take it too much further.
I mean, there's an interpretation here that Sanderson is confirming Kaladin as honor. Just saying.
It does seem very on the nose, which is strange. I passed by it. I remember reading Honor. My first thought was like, oh yeah, Stormlight. Wait, no, I'm not reading Stormlight. And so then yeah. I read past it and didn't think about it the way you did. Bringing it back, it's just so, yeah, a little uncanny, the comparison there.
I mean, goes to be strung up, flayed within an inch of its life, then cut down and left in a desert. Like, come on.
You've seen that.
Come on. You're writing word for word through like three chapters in The Way of Kings. Anyway, we don't have to keep going down my random Kaladin rabbit hole.
Wait, my only last question with this, Trevor, is this, I mean, do you think this is supposed to actually be like genuine question? I don't think this is right or wrong. Do you think this is really supposed to be like some kind of super, like a big, I guess, like, reveal on like who is Honor and Honor's coming back or things like that? Or is this just a fun little nod to like, you've read Stormlight as well? Because that's what I took it as, but sure. Maybe it's deeper and maybe it's a bigger thing than I thought, but my guess is that it's not, I guess. So
let me put it this way. 9 times out of 10, this is a like nameless nod to Stormlight, right? This was written the year after The Way of Kings, and he's just putting a little Easter egg in there for people who want to find it. However, like if this was any other author besides Brandon Sanderson, that's what I would say. But because this is Brandon Sanderson, the Mistborn Era 2 happens after Stormlight Era 1, which would happen after Stormlight 5. Right? With me so far?
Mm-hmm.
And we can talk about this more next episode as well. But Miles, who is the speaker of that quote, is a devout follower of Trell. And all I'll say is Trell might have witnessed some events, perhaps. Trell might be something else that we haven't talked about or have already talked about and haven't named correctly in Mistborn Era 2. That's what I'll say.
That certainly makes sense. Okay.
And maybe to put a slightly different spin on that, what if the events of Way of Kings have made their way into legend elsewhere? Sure. Maybe that's a saying. It's a reference to an old myth that is based on a real story from another planet that we've witnessed. And Miles has no idea what he's saying. Maybe for hundreds of years, no one has known exactly what it is, but that's maybe where it came from, the saying. Something
like that. What else? What do we have?
I've got a quote for you. It's been a while since I've read out part of the book, and we came across a good one in one of these chapters, so I had to grab it. It's in chapter 15. It's toward the end. So right at the end of the section of chapters we're covering, this kind of ties back to the Wax and Marcy interactions and how Wax is a very experienced veteran and Marcy is very inexperienced and very naive and experiencing a lot of the real world for the first time. And they're having a conversation between the two of them where she's realizing that the real heroes are a little bit different than what she's read about in the record books that she's studied. And this is Wax's response to some of her comments. He turned to her. "You are inexperienced. So was I once. So is every man. The measure of a person is not how much they have lived. It is not how easily they jump at a noise or how quickly they are to show emotion. It's in how they make use of what life has shown them." And that was just a quick little pithy nugget of wisdom in the midst of this rather more lighthearted, bullets flying everywhere kind of story. It was a quick little pause, let Wax drop a wisdom bomb on you, and then it moves on. But it was kind of a cool little moment there about how the measure of a person is what they do with what they've learned in life, not necessarily the fact that they've had more experiences or have more street smarts, but how they choose to use it matters more.
I feel like there's an on the nose Gandalf quote in there somewhere, right?
You've got to be right. Yeah.
Okay.
Always follow your nose is an on your nose on the nose Gandalf quote.
Okay, so we just a little bit of formatting, and then I'll ask you a question. We are not doing a Alloy of Law wrap-up episode. And next week, we're going to be talking a lot about the Sand Avalanche, a lot about the end of the book, some cool events that happened at the end of the book. This episode, we're more focused on characters. So since we're not doing a wrap-up episode, how would you guys rate or... not necessarily strictly rate, but how do you guys feel about our characters that have been introduced to us in the Alloy of Law here? Good? Bad? How would you rate them, like, compared to other Cosmere books, maybe?
I think the adjective I'd go for is fun, I think. They've been entertaining, very humorous, lots of banter, some decent development. Maybe not nearly as in-depth or big moments or inspirational as maybe other characters, but I didn't expect that at all, even just based on the size of the book. You pick up the book and what I know from Sanderson already, I know this is going to be a more lighthearted, a Dawnshard or an Edge Dancer almost, if you will. So it's been everything I expected. And so it's checked all the boxes, even if it hasn't gone nearly as deep as any other book we've read, but I don't think it was ever supposed to be that. So doesn't feel fair to compare it to others. Will I compare to others by the time we reach the end of Era 2? Like, yeah, definitely. Once we've had a much longer time to spend with these characters, once we've probably increased our scope and gotten into more life altering decisions and moments that they have to go through. But I didn't expect that of a book one here.
One thing that I think is interesting, so I agree with everything that Elliot said on that. I think, you know, I think the characters are really fun. I think they have really good fun banter. I'm trying to, even characters like, Steris is, I'm making sure I have everyone straight here. Steris is the girl who Wax is kind of pseudo betrothed to, and she has the whole contract on love and all this stuff like that.
Yes.
Right. Okay. She was even like, I, you know, she's a pretty secondary character. I would say tertiary, but we don't actually have that many characters. So she's definitely in the secondary level.
We don't count up to three.
yeah. Exactly. And she's been fun because it's like she's very, I guess, quirky. Like you get very vivid like picture of how she's going to interact as a character in her story pretty early on, which I think is good writing of characters of they she kind of stands out. So I think characters have done a really good job. One thing that I'm thinking of that's kind of unique with this that I kind of like is okay. So this book specifically, my understanding once again is it's kind of a one-off. Like it's an, a sort of individual story, and then we'll kind of have a trilogy as well. So 4-book series where like this book is kind of a standalone story, and then the rest
the
is
pilot.
Like a trilogy. Yeah, a big trilogy. I think that's neat because you get to meet the characters and kind of know them, and so then you can pick up on a trilogy where the characters can be more fleshed out in depth. Like you can jump right into the whole like you know, I guess the more deeper stuff of figuring out the characters. Backstories, paths, all sorts of stuff. You can explore other characters because we're already familiar with Wax and Wayne, I guess, right? You know, stuff like that. I feel like it allows time to meet the main characters so that then the other supporting cast can really be developed. This is all hypothetical. I don't know exactly how Brandon is going to write the rest of these books, but that's something that I was thinking of as sort of unique to this. As far as my enjoyment of the characters in this story compared to our other stories, I, of course, like her characters, but yeah, like Elliot, you know, I really like Wax and Wayne. They're cool. I'm not like, you know, they're not my favorite all-time Cosmere characters right now, but if they were, that'd be pretty crazy because feels like we still just met them, so.
Sure. Anything else before we get into a Stormlight refresher?
I got lots more for next episode, but I think that hits it for now.
All right. Sounds good. We will close it there. We will end Alloy of Laud next week, and then we will be jumping right into Shadows of Self the week after that. Let's do a Stormlight refresher, gentlemen. To refresh you two, Elliot is leading 7-5, and Elliot is going to lead the quiz questions for this week. Are you guys ready?
Bring it.
Alrighty. Your first is a chapter name. Oh, and just as a side note, this week and next week on these might be a little tricky. I kind of did that on accident. That's just kind of how it turned out, but here we go. Your first question is a chapter name from a Stormlight book. You need to give me a rough summary of what happened in the chapter. Elliot, your chapter name is Daughter of Traitors.
Is this... Are we limited to the main 4 books of Stormlight, or are novellas included?
Novellas are included.
Do they have names of the chapters in the novellas?
I won't answer that.
Helpful information.
Good question.
Yeah. I'll answer that after you answer the question. And Paul answers the question.
Yeah.
I'm gonna think aloud too much, but I'm just gonna go for it. I think this is Rissen. I'm now struggling if the interludes have chapter titles, because if they don't.
Hold up. The Daughter of Traitors with a T.
Oh, okay.
That was probably poor diction on my part. Daughter of Traitors.
Well, that changes everything.
There you go.
That is a good distinction, isn't it?
I had a whole thought process I was going to run with traitors, but
traitors. Yep. My bad. Thought I'd derail you before you.
I appreciate that.
Went down the wrong book.
I am. This has me more stumped. I don't have as much of a thought train to go along for this one. Daughter of Traitors. This is going to be Eshenai. She is discovering more and more about the world around her. It's probably a flashback. This is a flashback chapter about Eshonai as she is discovering the world and learning there's much more out there than she thought there was.
Incorrect. Paul?
Okay. I kind of like when Elliot goes first because I have time to think through my thoughts a little bit and arrive somewhere instead of talking as I usually talk forever, as I'm doing right now. I think this is a Shallan flashback chapter in Words of Radiance, where we're getting a lot more of the glimpses of Shallan's family and kind of how messed up they are with her dad and everything. So that's my understanding, is that I think Shallan may be the, quote, daughter of traitors.
Incorrect. Both good guesses. Elliot's closer. It's a Venli chapter, and they are on the march towards Yirithiru at the beginning of Rhythm of War, and they are infiltrating the basement.
Mm.
All right, Paul. Your quote ID, who is talking? Your brother tried very hard to get himself killed by a chasm fiend a few weeks back, but evidently the heralds watch over him.
Okay. Your brother tried very hard to get himself killed by a chasm fiend. But what was the last part?
But evidently the heralds watch over him.
Okay. Okay, so I'm trying to remember exactly where this is kind of on the tip of my tongue. Okay, hold on. Your brother tried to get himself killed. Okay, sorry. Can you read it for me one last time, and then
sure,
I have my guess.
Your brother tried very hard to get himself killed by a chasm fiend a few weeks back, but evidently the heralds watch over him.
Okay, I just need to know who's speaking.
Yes.
Okay, so I know who's being spoken to, I think. And yep. I have a couple ideas of who could actually be saying this. I'm going to go with the obvious one in my head and just say that this is Dalinar talking to Renarin.
Okay, you're correct, but for the wrong reasons. It is Dalinar. He is speaking to Yasna about Elokar. Elokar almost died to the Chasm Fiend at the beginning of the Way of Kings, and he's speaking to Yasna.
Okay, well, Spain. I knew it was someone who had a brother.
Okay.
Gosh.
Elliot, would you have got that, Dalinar?
I would have struggled a bit. I knew it was Yasna who was being spoken to, and the reference was Elokar, but Dalinar felt maybe a little too obvious. I probably would have guessed that out of simplicity, although I was doubting myself.
I almost guessed, my second guess, which I really almost went with, was that this was actually Elokar speaking to Renarin. Somehow.
Sure. I can see that maybe.
So okay. I thought it was going to be maybe the more tricky. Anyways. Okay.
One point to Paul. The most lucky point gained on this show so far.
Yeah, I think so.
Sorry. That makes up for your Adolin in the jail point that you missed.
Yeah, that's fair.
All right. Elliot, here's your review. You need to tell me what they rated it out of 5 and what book this is being written about. OMG, so good. I loved being back with one of my favorite characters and seeing things from their perspective. I definitely didn't know any of this, but it all made sense and flowed in with what we already knew very well. I can't wait to find out more and be on the lookout for things like this.
That's it.
Yeah, hold on. That's this. Okay.
I'm going to take a different tactic here and try and give Paul as little time to think about as I can. So this is Oathbringer 5 out of 5.
Okay, Paul, there you go.
Oh, that's a good tactic, actually. I think this is... this is a 5 out of 5.
See, I feel like that tactic would work if Paul was on a timer, but Paul's not on a timer, so he can take as much.
That's fair.
Paul can take as much time as he wants.
Maybe I'll sit over here and hum the Jeopardy theme to put some pressure on him.
Yeah. That always provides
pressure. To stop our auto editor from cutting up the noise, you got to put in all the noise.
Okay. Well, okay. I'm going to betray myself with this. I am very much not a plan of you know, strategy gaming it of like, okay, I'll pick the same answers that Elliot chooses because, you know, because I always want to come up with this, but
is this going to backfire?
But I don't have anything better, so I'm going to go Oathbringer 5 out of 5. For the, let the record show that I think, I'm not guessing this, but let the record show that I think this is a 5 out of 5 for Rhythm of War, not Oathbringer. But I'll probably regret that since I'm doing that. But I'm sticking with Oathbringer 5 out of 5 because I'm trying to get down to business and maybe make a comeback in this whole trivia thing.
Fascinating. Didn't matter. Both of you were both incorrect.
Okay.
On everything. This is 4 out of 5 for Mistborn Secret History.
Oh, look at you.
Oh, that was sneaky.
Being sneaky.
That was vague enough. It was hard to gather
it,
that.
It was vague, but if I reread it, I loved being back with one of my favorite characters and seeing things from their perspective. I definitely didn't know any of this, but it all made sense and flowed in with what we already knew. I can't wait to find out more and be on the lookout for things like this. There,
that does make sense.
Yeah. There's something they're talking about something specific, right?
Yeah, like yeah.
Okay. It is an anticlimactic 1-0 to Paul. Moving into this final trivia question, Paul, this goes to you for the win. What is the name of the gem that they trap the thrill in?
The name of the gem that they trap the thrill in.
No pressure, but I bet Elliot will get this.
Yeah, I think you're right. And it's okay, I can vividly remember.
He can't even see my face and he can read me.
Reading and talking about that. That's funny. Okay. Okay. I have a couple like general ideas, but I don't think I know the exact. I don't think I remember precisely. I think one of the thoughts that's in my head is that this is just like the King's Jewel. I'm gonna go with that. It is the King's Jewel because it was in like the vault thing and stuff. So, what is King's Jewel on our Jeopardy?
Oh. Do I give that to him, Elliot?
No.
Okay, what is it?
I say a confident no because I feel like I have the right answer, although the more I've thought about it, the more I'm starting to doubt myself. And I think if you're watching on YouTube, it's in our artwork right next to my little frame right here glowing in the corner. I believe it's called the King's Drop is the correct name for it, which I will answer Paul's previous competitiveness with some of my own competitiveness and suggest you do not accept his answer.
But he's close.
He's quite close.
If Elliot is exactly correct, then I think it should go to Elliot. I will be a good sport about it.
Do a poll on our YouTube.
All right. So this one will be not scored yet. Let us know down in the comments if the King's Jewel should count as a point for Paul there. Yes, the King's Drop is correct. Elliot, you're correct. I would probably, although that's leading the witness on down below, I would probably lean towards Paul doesn't get the point, but it's close, so let me know.
Well, you didn't have to say that whenever you open it up for comment. All right, so vote for me if you want. This is my campaign now. Vote for me if you want a more exciting series that's 7-6.
Yeah,
or if you want a lame series that's, you know.
So do you want this very cool and interesting 7-6 score?
Or do we leave 7-5 for the third week in a row? That's boring. Like, you know, those are the two options you have, but pick whichever one you want, I guess.
No, that's funny. I respect the outcome of whoever's mercy I've met mercy of, you know.
Okay. We will conclude it there. Thanks for joining me, Paul and Elliot. We will reconvene next week, and I'll let you know what the score is next week. Or maybe the week after.
See you next time.